Our hearing today, the 17th of August, 2022. The time is exactly 10 o'clock. Our hearings
recording in progress.
Let me welcome all the honorable members here at M46 and in the virtual platform. Let me also welcome here at M46, the public protector and her legal team led by Advocate Mpofu. Also to acknowledge and welcome evidence leaders at M46, Advocate Mayosi and Advocate Bauer, members of the media, members of the public, present with us in your various platforms, the YouTube and 408. You're all welcome. Just want to make sure that we have our link working. Advocate Mpofu, do you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you, Madam Chairperson and honorable members.
Thank you. Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. It means our link is working.
Sorry, I thought it felt like there was an echo on my side. Can you hear me clearly, Chair?
It's very clear, Advocate Mpofu.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, colleagues. As I just indicated that we have a new witness on the stand for us here today. Before I invite Advocate Bauer, just to indicate that I did get a message through Advocate Matlape, Advocate Mpofu, that you're asking for an opportunity to address. I indicated I will do that, just so that you know. Let me now recognize Advocate Bauer.
Good morning, Chair. Our witness, good morning. Our witness today is Mr. Gumbi Chialela, who will be testifying. Are you first going to give Mr. Advocate Mpofu an opportunity to address the committee before we go to the witness?
I'm not going to do that. I just want to check, is Fatima online?
Yes, Chair, I am.
Okay. Just be ready. I'd indicated Advocate Bauer having received the request from Advocate Matlape about Advocate Mpofu want to address, but it's in relation to correspondence that would have been sent to him from the chair, not about the witness, and so I would want to treat those things in that way.
Chair, I don't understand what that means.
Hello?
So, Chair, you're cutting.
Can you hear me, Advocate Mpofu?
Yes, I can hear you now, Chairperson. Yes. My hand is up.
I hope you did hear me when I was speaking and in response to your request. Let me hear you.
Yes, no, I did hear you, Chairperson. But when you said you're going to give me the opportunity, I think like Ms. Bauer, I thought you were going to give it to me now, because I would prefer to do that and get it out of the way so that we then deal with the witness. It's just to place a few things on the record as usual. I don't want to do that in the middle of the witness's testimony when he has already been sworn in, because then it becomes almost part of his transcript, if you know what I mean.
Well, let's see how it goes. I think you have persuaded the chair.
Thank you, Chair.
To keep an opportunity. Let me allow you to do that.
Thank you, Chair. And it won't be long, Chair. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, it's about the correspondence that we have received from yourselves yesterday. Yes, unfortunately, we only received this issue, the outcome of the of your deliberations in the media, through the media, which we were quite worried about, because we, as you remember, we had said that we didn't want to discuss the matter in the media before raising it here. But unfortunately, the committee, I think, saw it fit to release a media statement before informing us through this platform here of the developments. But I'm just flagging that as just as an issue of concern. Maybe going forward, we should just have a protocol of how these things are communicated, because otherwise, you know, both sides can, or all parties and the committee can start with the media before addressing things here, which might lead to undesirable results here. But be that as it may, Chair, we did then receive the correspondence, and that is the issue that we want to address. It was regarding our application to you in terms of 5.3 of the directive to take the necessary steps to summon Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa to appear before the committee as a witness. Now, the two documents we received is your letter, about which I'm not going to say much, because that it simply records the discussions in the committee. And we note that the matter was decided probably by majority vote. And we note what is put in your letter about Honorable Heron's position, that the committee should have sought information from us as to why we wish to call the president, or further information, I suppose, more than the information that we furnished. And reading between the lines, we assume that proposal was defeated by the majority. Okay, so that's all that we have to say about the letter. The issue that we wish to address, Chair, just for your information, because it's connected to the other request you make in your letter about us finishing you with our list of witnesses by no later than this Friday, so that can be factored into your planning process regarding the program, the proposed program, or the old program, or whichever version of it. And just to assure you that, yes, we have actually made such or reached such an agreement with the evidence leaders in our meeting last Friday. And so we will do our best to comply with that request. But the only connection between that request and what I'm about to address is the fact that it obviously deals with witnesses, with our list of witnesses, and also it might affect how we would have sequenced those witnesses if Mr. Ramaphosa was one of them, or will be one of them, or whatever is going to happen. Right. Now, then the next leg of what I want to then discuss, Chair, not discuss, just place on the record, is that we, as I say, we received the first report of this from the media, and we almost fell into the trap of, which we shouldn't have, we should know better, of believing the media narrative, which was that there was an opinion against the appearance of the president. But thanks to you, we have now received a copy of the opinion. And our view is that the opinion does not say what is reported in the media, because the opinion at paragraph 46 says that there is no legal impediment that prohibits the committee from summoning the president or another person to appear before the inquiry. It may do so, and then it explains the criteria. Then it says, in the event that the committee is of the view that the president's presence before this committee is necessary, we advise that in the spirit of cooperative governance, the committee itself first invites president before proceeding with the issuing of a summons. And that's really the gist of the opinion. So, and we agree with the opinion, by the way, that there's no legal impediment to the calling of Mr. Ramaphosa. And which means the only legal impediment, quote unquote, is the vote of the committee. In other words, the committee, knowing that it had no legal impediment, voted against calling the person. That obviously then becomes the only legal impediment to his calling. So we want to just record that it doesn't, it's got nothing to do with the opinion. On the contrary, the opinion states the correct legal position. Now, well, at least in that respect, we differ with some of aspects in the opinion. For example, its invocation of the prerogative, you know, some colonial thing called the prerogative, which doesn't exist in a constitutional democracy. But those are just issues that will be addressed in due course. The other issue that we take is that, just for the record, to explain once again, and this would be in support of Honorable Heron's position, that maybe we should have been asked to explain certain things if they were not clear, because we thought they were clear, but obviously they were not. And one of them is the issue of the suspension. When we refer to the suspension in the first letter, we were not referring to the issues that are before the courts. We obviously know better than that. We wouldn't have called the president just to canvass the issues that are before the Western Cape High Court. The suspension does not only concern the issues in the Western Cape High Court. It also involves the overlaps between this process and which would trigger the president's power to suspend, in other words, outside of the issues that are before the court. So obviously that was completely misunderstood, but again, it is what it is. But apart from those kinds of issues, as I say, we are in agreement with the conclusion of the opinion that there's no legal impediment against calling Mr. Ramaphosa. And I call him Mr. Ramaphosa not out of disrespect, but I'm simply trying to explain another point which we want to place on record. That he, although obviously we had to address him at his workplace, so to speak, we were not calling him in his capacity as the president as such of the country, but as a citizen, as a witness, like any other witness, who has implicated the public protector in conduct, alleged conduct, which would be impeachable before this committee. That's really all. So he is in no different position than a Mr. Van Lochenberg or Mr. Pillay and all those other witnesses who had made allegations in affidavits. And then they were called here to deal with those allegations to support the impeachability or otherwise of the alleged conduct contained in their affidavits. So it's untenable to say Mr. Pillay and Mr. Van Lochenberg, for example, should be called, but Mr. Ramaphosa should not be called. It just doesn't make sense. But again, we don't want to debate that issue now because the decision has already been made. So where we are then, Chair, is to simply indicate to this committee that we do not accept the majority decision of the committee to go against the opinion and what we have said, and we would have preferred to that if there were issues that need to be clarified, and if there is such an opportunity still, we are asking for it, for us to clarify further areas where there might have been a lack of clarity, for example, the suspension issue that I've just mentioned. Failing all that, in other words, if you are not prepared to go that route, then obviously we will then take your letter at face value as the final word on the issue, and then we will take whatever legal steps might be necessary to secure the presence of this necessary witness. The last point, Chair, is to say that which is another fundamental mistake in the approach. The witness is not being called because he may be necessary or deemed necessary by the committee. There are three types of witnesses: those that might be called by the evidence leaders because they find that witness necessary, those that might be called by us, and those that might be called by the committee. So the question as to whether the witness is necessary must be viewed from the point of view of the public protector, who's the person calling this particular witness, who has just refused to come, like any other witness, like Mr. Kekana, who I think had refused to come in respect of the evidence leaders. And they therefore invoke the rules in order to secure his attendance, as he confirmed here. So again, the president in that respect is not any different to Mr. Kekana. So that's another area that seems to be have caused some confusion as to whether the necessity is, in other words, whether the witness must be deemed necessary by the committee or by us who are calling him. That's where we are with that issue, and we are going to, therefore, the only problem, Chair, is that it might affect not so much the number of witnesses, because we can always postulate a scenario where he's one of the witnesses and another one where he's not one of the witnesses. I think that's easy to plan. But it will certainly affect our sequencing of the witnesses, because until that matter is resolved, we obviously have a right to sequence our witnesses in a manner that we prefer. So if, for argument's sake, we wanted to call him as our first witness, and I'm not saying that's the case, then it would affect our next witness would come, because we might not want him to come as number 10 if we wanted him to come at number 1 or number 3 or whatever. I think that it's clear that it will affect at least the sequencing, if not the number of witnesses. So it might cause a glitch in your request for us to indicate in more certain terms on Friday our witnesses, although we will endeavor to do so. Sorry, Chair, let me just check if there's anything else that I'm... Yes, the final point is, there's also some problem with the opinion regarding its invocation of the State Capture Commission case and that kind of thing, because this is not a commission of inquiry. This is a different process. Both of them are not courts of law, but they are completely different. So we don't accept that there's any relevance in respect of the state capture matter. In any event, the part that is quoted doesn't assist the writer of the opinion. But again, as I say, we don't want to quibble much with all those things, because we agree ultimately with their conclusion. Yes,
I think that's it.
That's it, Chair. That's it. So long and short is that, we will advise you, as soon as we have worked out our legal position in terms of the legal opinion that we are formulating around these issues, hopefully before Friday, before the Friday date of the witnesses. But you must just be rest assured that we do not accept the decision. And to the extent that it might be challengeable, it will be challenged. And whatever implications that might have in on this body, we will then address you further. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu, for placing all of those matters on the record. Just to briefly indicate as I proceed that the committee would have met yesterday, deliberated on a full agenda of items in front of it, including deliberating on this matter. And it satisfied itself on what was before it and decided that the matter does not pass the test it set for itself. In that regard, it's taken that decision as a committee. I would have written, therefore, on behalf of the committee, the correspondence you're referring to. We will await any response that you will formally write back to the committee based on that letter. Just also to indicate that the nature of the work of oversight in all parliamentary committees is the kind of work that is transparent, open to the public. Everything we do and say gets to be reported on the spot. And because our meetings are open to the public and the media. So even before a statement would be issued by the chair on behalf of the committee, media houses of whatever form are in their own right to report. They would even report who said this and so on. So they would have reported a decision of the committee. And so by the time you receive the correspondence formally from the chair, you would have been told, given clips in televisions about what they call breaking news. We have no control over that by the very nature that our work of this National Assembly and Parliament requires us to do, and I think that's stipulated in our constitution. It's a constitutional obligation. So unless a meeting would have been convened in camera, and when you do that, reasons get to be provided to justify. So I'm trying to reflect on your discomfort, which I sympathize with, that before you could read this letter, you already were seeing things flying. And I do know that you understand that fully. You are in this space. The legislature space, you've interfaced with that, and at some point you were in that space. So it's not something that you don't know. I thought I must just explain that. We will await your response to the letter that we have written to you. I take cognizance of the commitment you make subject to being able to deliver on the date on Friday. I accept that. There might be some difficulties. I think you've placed those on the record because that would also have been raised in the letter itself. So I just want to make those points in relation to the issues you've placed on the record. And I think at this point, It is not an item on our agenda. We have noted it, and you have some difficulty even including with the legal opinion. Well, our attitude on the legal opinion, it's very clear that a legal opinion is a decision enabler. It's not a decision on its own. So we would have taken our own decision as a committee, having satisfied ourselves with a legal opinion. Because imagine if a legal opinion says close shop, and wouldn't just do that. So it provides a basis.
Thank
for
you.
ADC.
No, Chair, you are preaching to the converted.
I'm not referring to you.
Okay.
I'm not referring to you. I'm just making the point, but maybe you're right. Let me not labor the point. Thank you very much in that regard. And I I'm still on the platform. So I just want to summarize the issues in that regard and indicate that to members of the committee, this is not a discussion point, because I would want us to proceed and start our proceedings. You would have raised one or two issues about the witness. I'm going to ask Advocate Bauer to also perhaps clarify that. But I am now proceeding, therefore, to the next point, Advocate Mpofu, and I don't want us to have a to-and-fro and dialogue on this matter. Any quick point you want to raise?
Yes, Chair. I'm not going to have a dialogue, especially if, as you say, there's not going to be any interchange with the members on this point. I've said what I've said. I'm not going to repeat it. Chair, firstly, just for your own comfort here, on the issue of the media, I accept what you're saying. The meeting is open, and it would have been reported, like any other open meeting. The only issue we're raising really was that it was just the discomfort of hearing this for the first time or being asked about it. That's what living in a constitutional democracy means. Yeah. So the only concern was to the extent to which I raised that the reporting was distorted, but again we should not have been surprised by that. Therefore that's why I've placed on record what our reading of the opinion is, but we're not blaming the committee, but also on our side, we will always try to not to raise things in the public space if it can be avoided before we raise them here. That's all I was saying. Because, for example, we were being asked to respond to this yesterday, as you can imagine, Chair. But we refused to do so because we said, no, we'll keep to the protocol of raising the issue here formally rather than having some media spat about it, so to speak, an unnecessary media spat. So I just want you to understand our position as well, that we will try to do that. But now and again, we might also be forced to place things, to respond, at least when things get into the media before they are placed.
That's
here.
Perfectly.
Thank you, Chairperson.
That's perfectly in order. Thank you. I am with you. I understand that, Advocate Mpofu. Thank you very much. Can we now proceed and I invite Advocate Bauer and should I start with Ms. Ibrahim? Okay. Ms. Fatima Ibrahim, can you please lead us and deal with the preliminaries of the witness?
Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Chair Lala, can you hear me?
Come again.
I'm asking if the witness can hear me, Chair.
Maybe I will ask you to introduce yourself as you're going to do through the witness. just place on record who you are.
I'm Fatima Ibrahim, a legal advisor to Parliament, and I'm going to be administering your oath. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Good morning.
Good morning. Can I please ask that you state your full name for the record?
Gumbi Chialela.
Thank you. Mr. Chialela, you have been invited subject to the provisions of Section 16 of the Powers, Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act of 2004 to appear before this committee as a witness and to answer questions in respect of the committee's inquiry into the removal of the public protector, Advocate Nkweba. Please be informed that by law, you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of this inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a House or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside of Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Please be aware further that in terms of Section 17(2) of the Powers Act, a person who willfully furnishes a House or committee with information or makes a statement before it which is false or misleading commits an offence and is liable to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years. I'm now going to require you to take an oath or to affirm that the evidence you are about to give is truthful. Which do you prefer?
I prefer an oath.
May I ask that you please raise your right hand and repeat after me? I swear that the evidence I shall give.
I swear that the evidence I shall give.
Shall be the truth.
Shall be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you. Chair, the witness is now duly sworn in.
Thank you, Ms. Fatima Ibrahim. That was well done with the slow pace. And thank you to Mr. Chialela as well. I now hand over to Advocate Bauer.
Chair, before I turn to posing questions to the witness, I need to put the witness's evidence into a context and also alert the committee to Advocate Mpofu's position in respect of the witness. The committee will be aware that charge 4, and I quote it from the motion, is a charge that states as follows, that Advocate Nkubani is guilty of misconduct in that Advocate Nkubani has intimidated, harassed, and or victimized staff. Alternatively, has failed to protect staff in the Office of the Public Protector from intimidation, harassment, and or victimization by the erstwhile CEO of the Office of the Public Protector, Mr. Vusi Mashlango, in particular the following staff members who have been threatened with or had disciplinary action taken against them, unlawful and trumped up charges. Now, this witness is the acting head corporate services in the Office of the Public Protector, who essentially oversees the management or the department or care of human resources within the organization. The committee would, in its deliberations, have to make a call on the question of intimidation, harassment, and or victimization of staff. And what is before this committee in evidence and will be put in evidence or is contained in the motion already is instances of employees who have been dismissed, employees who have been charged, employees who have received Audi letters, letters which we will explain in a bit. And the context is to make a determination that within an organization, whether steps that are taken in relation to employees fall into the category as predicated in the motion or fall into a category as to whether that falls within simple or labor-related or human resource management within the department or organization. And for that reason, the evidence leaders felt that in respect of people who appear or whose names have arisen in this context, that it was important for the committee to hear what the leadership in relation to human resources could place before the committee in relation to what is contained in documentation that falls under his control. So that's the context of it. Mr. Mpofu reflected to me that he thought the evidence would be irrelevant. And I think he may make that motion to the chair once I stop. And that for purposes of curtailing the duration, he didn't intend to cross-examine the witness, although he reserved his right to ask a few clarificatory questions on issues raised in sections A, B, and C of the affidavit, and sections D, 2, 3, 4, 10, 12, 14, 15, and 16, in an endeavor for us to assist in the process today. Mr. Chilela, good morning.
Good morning, Advocate Bauer.
Currently the acting head corporate services in the Office of the Public Protector, correct?
That's correct.
Chairperson. And by virtue.
Sorry, Advocate.
Did I hear? Did you, Advocate Mpofu?
Yes, Chair. Sorry, I think you didn't see my hand.
Okay. Sorry.
Yes. No, Chair. Yeah. Sorry. I'm sorry to both the witness and Advocate Bauer. Yeah. Yes. No. As she indicated, I had indicated to her that I was going to say something about this witness before he starts. And again, I won't be long. Firstly, I confirm the sections that we are saying that we won't necessarily deal with. In other words, which we are not disputing, in line with the guidance of Honorable Heron, as indicated by Advocate Bauer, although we have reserved our right to ask a few clarificatory questions should it transpire that that is necessary, because sometimes the oral evidence goes further than what is on paper. But the most important thing, Chair, is one in respect of which you may need to make a ruling if you are so disposed here. And that is the issue that of relevance that Advocate Bauer raised, or rather said we were going to raise here. We can't work out exactly what this witness is going to add to the issues raised, even in that charge of victimization, harassment, and intimidation, because he doesn't make any such claims. But I mean, maybe I should just read it as we indicated it to Ms. Bauer. We said, in respect of the witness, Jalela, we are of the view that his evidence is irrelevant to the motion. However, we know that the chairperson will rule otherwise if previous experience is anything to go by. Therefore, and to curtail the duration, we do not intend to cross-examine on this and that, and as we explained earlier. So that's our position, Chair. I think just as a formality, that's our objection to the witness. You may rule that he is relevant, and then we go ahead.
Before I go to Advocate Bauer, Advocate Mpofu, I'm sure we will agree here. I don't want you to bring a briefcase You know my briefcase story. I don't want to bring a briefcase of rulings into this. I welcome that you are placing on record that you don't believe, and based on what you have, you don't think that there's relevance about the witness on which evidence will be led. I think I firmly take that, and you want me to rule on that. But before I make the ruling, just to make the point that you can't be knowing what ruling I'm going to make. Even if you have got abilities to read one's mind, or you have the ability based on some form of a track record, I wouldn't want you to make those conclusions.
Okay.
I would have indicated before that we're going to deal with each witness, understand and deal with those issues, because the way you're putting it now, in other games, is called a preemptive strike. So that I do the opposite.
No, you can surprise us, Chair, but we are not some homers, but we can do what in mathematics is called extrapolation.
No, thank you, Advocate Mpofu. So I'm just indicating that as much as I'm asking you not to, I also don't have briefcase rulings that everything put on the table, I will rule in a particular way. I want you not to go that level about how you understand the chair in doing this. We've been consistent. Perhaps we have made this point before, and we'll go to a ruling that says allow the committee to go through this and listen to the evidence that will be led with the witness, and I'm sure before the end of the day we would or when they deliberate and ask their questions, members would deal with some of those issues. For now, the only ruling I will make that we proceed and hear the evidence and interact with the witness. But I did not come with a ready prepared ruling on the matter. Thank you, Chairperson.
We understand, and we are suitably surprised. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Let's proceed, Advocate Bauer.
Can I maybe for the record also say that when we look at witnesses, we don't only look at them to make out a case as such as I seem to be understanding it, as to does the witness evidence support intimidation, harassment, and or victimization, but also whether there's evidence which shows something to the contrary. In other words, it seemed logical that if you're talking about harassment of staff, that HR needs to talk to the committee. But I leave it at that. Let me, Mr. Chelela, can I come back to you? And I apologize that we've delayed your evidence. Your affidavit for the record is to be found in Bundle D at page 3383. Now, by virtue of your position, and I'm going to take you through things very quickly, given Mr. Mpofu's position on the evidence. You have documentation under your control. You've provided us with access to that documentation. And some of the documentation has been annexed to your affidavit, or have been provided to the committee and have been used by other witnesses or in that regard. You also indicated to us that you don't necessarily have personal knowledge of every item in the document, but you're before the committee for purposes of assisting the committee, and if there's anything you can't deal with orally, you will indicate such and endeavor to obtain that information and provide it to the committee in writing. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Right. Now, I didn't detail it in your affidavit, but possibly for purposes of the committee, could you just explain what your position entails within the organization? You have an acting position and the position you occupy in a permanent post.
Okay, thank you, Chair. My substantive position is Senior Manager, Human Resources, but I'm currently acting as the Executive Manager, Corporate Services.
And can you just say, how long have you been with the PPSA and in your position as acting head of corporate services, what departments fall under you?
I joined PPSA in April 2016. And the units that fall under me are human resources, facilities management, legal services, knowledge management, ICT, and communications.
Thank you. Now, the first section of your affidavit deals with organograms, and there are approved organograms within the organization that sets out what funded positions are within the PPSA, correct?
That's correct, sir.
And these are usually detailed in your annual reports. As far as organograms is concerned, there's only one issue I'd like to confirm with you, that the position of chief of staff has always been a funded post since 2016, at least. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
Right. Then if we go to policies, the organization itself has a number of policies which you've provided to us on various issues ranging within the organization, correct?
That is correct.
And you've given us the register reflecting those policies, and a number of them are detailed in your affidavit. And these are updated every few years, is that not so?
Yes, that is correct.
Right. And right. Then, and these policies, to who do they apply?
They apply to all PPSA staff.
Right. That would not include the executive authorities, save to the extent that the policies empower them to do something specific, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Then in section C, you deal with, you set out two of the documentation dealing with the austerity measures that have been put in place in the organization, which is annexed to your affidavit at 3416. And 3418. And if you could just go to, they're not materially different, correct?
No, they are not materially different. That is correct.
Right. And can you tell us what usually underscores these cost containment measures that are imposed?
Well, it would be circulars, for example, from the National Treasury. It would be our spending throughout the year. We'll receive quarterly reports from finance. Then that will determine whether we should take action, whether if, for example, we foresee over expenditure at the end of the financial year. So those would require us to make decisions during the course of the year regarding spending.
Right. So in fact, on the first memo, one of the concerns was indeed over expenditure in 2018-2019, as you see from the memorandum attached. You see that?
Yes, that is correct.
In paragraph 2.1, which is at 3417.
Yes. That is correct.
we see that the nature austerity measures or cost contact. Mr. Chalele,
you are breaking. I did not get that.
Okay, so the question to you is that if we look at paragraph 2.3 and we see the nature of the cost containment measures, then they relate to catering, traveling, accommodation, in this regard, specific to the organization, further outreach clinics beyond what is required for target purposes, the usage of telephone, traveling, etc. Correct?
That is correct.
All right. And in fact, we see similar cost containment measures in the next memorandum, which is issued in September 2019, which is a GT2.
That is correct.
Now, in paragraph 10 of your affidavit, I asked you, you were asked about the existence of a circular issued by the CEO, Mr. Mashlangu, dealing with the PPSA not opposing review applications, and you indicated you were not aware of that circular, but you were aware of a decision that had been taken. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, sir, that is correct. I was not aware of the circular, but I was aware of the decisions that were taken because, as I indicated earlier, these matters are reported in our management meetings. So I was aware of the decision that was taken in one of the meetings that we should not oppose all matters. That is to cap, that is cost.
All right. Then I further document which was then prepared as reflected in paragraph 11 at effectively our request was a list of employee or labor related disputes that have arisen and the progress and outcome of these matters and to an extent the cost incurred by these matters. And you then tasked Ms. Manyiki, the manager labor relations, to assist in the compilation of this document, correct?
That is correct, Chair.
And in doing so, this was done in conjunction with the finance department and legal services. And if I could just put that document on the screen, and it is to be found at bundle D, it's 18.15 and 18.16. We could just go to 18.15 first. And effectively what this lists is in three categories. Maybe we should work from the bottom up. Go to the table right at the bottom. If you go down. Right. If we look at the grievance column, maybe go up a little bit up where we can see the heading, right? These are, this table only relates to employees at head office, correct?
That's correct.
Right. So these would be just, can I maybe phrase it as the run-of-the-mill issues that are dealt with in the ordinary labor-related environment in an organization. Would you agree with that?
Can you repeat that?
That the nature of the grievances would relate to perhaps what one would call ordinary run-of-the-mill labor-related matters that arise in an organization.
Yes, that is correct.
And who would normally attend to these grievances?
According to our grievance procedure, they start at the lowest level, the supervisor level, and then if it's not resolved there, it moves up until it goes to the public protector. So it goes
that is up the management levels until it goes to the public protector if it's not resolved at different levels.
And if we look at this and the grievance has been resolved at the first level, then it never goes up the chain. Would that be correct?
No, that is correct, yes.
Right. Okay, so let's go up to the next table. At which stage of these, the next table relates to disputes, although the heading says CCMA, we understand it to be disciplinary proceedings and CCMA, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Fine. Now, if the grievance isn't resolved with an employee, then it goes to the next level, and what would that be?
Well, it would go up to the public protector. And then if the grievant is still not satisfied, then he or she can declare a dispute.
Okay. So that's, sorry, I'm rephrasing this. I'm phrasing this badly. Sorry, Mr. Chelela. When we look at this list of disputes that's concluded in this list, these are people in relation to whom disciplinary proceedings had been instituted before a disciplinary chairperson, alternatively the CCMA. Would that be correct?
That is correct, yes.
Right. And what this column show is effectively the position the person was in, the nature of the dispute, the status of the matter, the legal costs that had been incurred, and the cost to the organization as a consequence of the award that's been made. Correct?
That is correct, yes.
Right, so if we go down, let's use Mr. Samuel as an example because he is known to the committee in this way, all right? Stop on that page. Go a little bit up. Go up. Oh, no, that's going down. Go up. Right, stop. Right. So it would effectively say Mr. Samuel was the provincial representative of Free State. The issue was an unfair dismissal. The commissioner found that the dismissal was substantively unfair and ordered payment to be reinstated retrospectively. The next column then shows the cost to the public protector's office of running the legal matter, and the final column would show what the award was emanating from the disciplinary proceedings, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Then if we see with Mr. Kikana, it will show that the award was in favor of the PPSA and that there's currently a pending review before the Labour Court, so there's no award that's been made to him. And effectively, the costs for Mr. Kakana is then either dealt with in the next schedule or alternatively, it will be dealt with when we deal with the question of legal costs. Correct?
That is correct, yes.
All right. So in where we discuss any of the employees in your affidavit, then a snapshot is on this schedule.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. So for purposes of ascertaining where costs lie and the question of what is legal cost is one of the issues that we must come to next week with the committee. When you pay out an award to an employee which is labor related, then that award and the cost of the litigation comes out of the litigation budget. Would that be correct?
That is correct, yes.
So a component of what is spent on legal fees would come from labor-related matters.
Yes, that is correct.
So for purposes of this committee, not all the litigation costs necessarily relate to the review of the reports that emanate from the Public Protector's Office. Would you agree?
Yes, I agree. That is correct.
All right. Now, if we go to the next schedule that is prepared, right? Which you see at 18.16. Right? There are a number of employees, and there's seven that's listed here. As a matter of principle, if you go down to the bottom column, it shows the periods of the suspension of these employees and the salaries that are paid during the suspension. Correct?
That is correct, yes.
Right. The total, and I did total it, it's 10 million and something. I don't have the figure here, but I'll just double check it during the adjournment. But the principle that I just want to raise with you, that totals at the bottom don't come from the legal costs bills, but they come from the employment component of the organization. Would that be correct? In other words, yes. It's salaries. It comes out of salaries.
Yes, it's the cost of employment.
Okay. Right. And then if we turn to paragraph 13 of your affidavit. Right. If you deal with matters which would fall under grievances at the first level, like performance bonuses, job grades, leave policies, if you resolve it at level one, then it wouldn't entail any public protector involvement at that level. Would you agree with that?
Yes, that is correct.
It is when steps are taken further that the public protector may get involved.
Yes,
would you agree with that?
That is correct, yes.
Then, and further, if you go to paragraph 15, it is also so that when the grievances or labor matters are dealt with internally, then there aren't cost implications. It's only when external service providers are engaged that they are cost incurred. Correct?
That is correct, yes.
Now maybe we have heard about this Audi letter somewhat, and we're probably going to hear a bit more, but can you maybe from a labor perspective explain to the committee what is an Audi letter?
An Audi letter is a letter that is usually sent by the supervisor to his or her subordinate to explain why he or she has not done what he was expected or supposed to do.
Okay. And what then happens? That letter gets issued and the employee then responds, and then?
The employee responds, and then if the response of the employee is satisfactory, then that is the end of the matter. And then if the response according to the supervisor is not satisfactory, then further action may be taken. And an employee, for example, could be issued with a verbal warning, written warning, or whatever sanction. So that's basically what happens after the out letter has been received and dealt with.
Right. We then inquired from you as to give us an indication of whether you issued these letters and to give us an indication as to how many letters of this nature would have been issued within the organization. And if you could perhaps explain to the committee how this operates.
Thank you. As I indicated earlier, it normally comes from a supervisor, the immediate supervisor, asking the employee to explain whatever the supervisor wants it to be explained. And then if the employee explains to the satisfaction of the supervisor, then that's the end of the matter. If the supervisor is not satisfied with the explanation, then further action could be taken.
And so when a supervisor issues an Audi letter, are you necessarily provided with such letter?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's a, that is a line management function. They don't necessarily have to involve HR unless that is they want HR to advise that is on the matter. Otherwise, they don't have to involve us.
So in other words, one of the what you could not provide the committee with is an indication of how many of such hourly letters would have been issued to employees within the PPSA over any period of time, correct?
Yes, correct.
Right. You were then asked whether you had been instructed specifically to issue hourly letters by the PP and the context in which that was done. Could you explain that to the committee?
Yes, I some time ago I received a WhatsApp from the PP asking me to draft an audit letter to one of the senior investigators because she did not attend the meeting which she was supposed to attend with PP. And PP that is took that as insubordination.
And what did you then do?
Well, because I did not know the details of the matter. So in an audit letter, you need to be specific what you want the employee to respond to. So I contacted the line manager and then I informed her that I've received this WhatsApp from PP and I don't know what are the issues. Can she explain to me? And then she said, no, as line management, they are dealing with the matter. I don't have to do anything. They are dealing with the matter. So then I informed PP that, no, I've conducted the line managers that are dealing with the matter. So then I left it there.
And what then arose after that?
I assume that they dealt with the matter. I never took any further that is action that is on the matter.
Okay, and you were never asked, so that was the end of the matter?
That was the end of the matter. PP just raised a concern that they were too slow in dealing with the matter.
Okay, so if we turn to a few of the employees whom this committee has been told about, let me just do it. Mr. Nshunzi has already given evidence, and if we could just go to paragraph 20 of your affidavit. Right. I'm just going to run through it quickly. He had been appointed to the position senior manager security management in 2017, pursuant to a panel shortlisting him. And there were, and when it's a senior post, do you sit on the panel, Mr. Nchilela?
Yes, in senior management positions, I do sit in panels.
And what is you explained that you ask the HR related questions, but you don't score with the panel, but you are involved in the shortlisting process.
Yes, I'm usually the secretary of the meeting. I ask HR related questions. I also advise on HR related matters to the panel.
And in this matter, there was a representative from the State Security Agency that sat on the panel. Is it common for external persons with expertise of a particular nature to assist the PPSA in the appointment of posts?
Yes, it is common.
In fact, sometimes you get a representative from the Public Service Association or the Public Service Commission who sits on the panel as well, correct?
Public Service Commission, not association.
That's right. That's my apologies. I wasn't sure which one, so I thought I'll put both to you. All right. Now, at some point, Mr. Nshunzi said he was moved from security to intake assessment and customer services in paragraph 23, and I think the date should be 2019, not 2018, correct? There's an error typo in your affidavit.
That's correct. It should be 2019.
Yeah. And we asked you whether this was pursuant to a recommendation contained in a report that had been provided by Diale Mogashwa.
Mogashwa, yes.
Right. Relating to the overhaul of the security department. Are you aware of this at all?
I'm aware of the investigation that was conducted by Diale Mogashwa investigators.
Were you involved in the decision making in relation to Mr. Nshunzi's transfer?
No, I was not involved.
Okay, so what? When do you become involved in that process?
Well, because it's an HR matter, I would be informed by the CEO that such a decision has been taken, and then I would be requested to make a submission to that effect.
And then the transfer would take place?
Yes.
Were you aware of a process in the organization at the time of transferring people internally for purposes of matching skills to jobs?
No.
Now, we know from GT3, and we've had this before, so I'm just going to run through it, that Mr. Nshunzi was told to come back to work after the investigation had been completed and that his garden leave had been uplifted. Now, in GT4 is a memorandum in relation to this issue of garden leave, in respect to which, it's a paragraph, it's on 68, and it would be page 1501, just for that. You were asked to advise on this issue of garden leave. Can you perhaps just elaborate to the committee in relation to that?
Yes, there were allegations of leakage of information. And then because the information that was allegedly leaked resides in security management unit. So obviously, Mr. Nshunzi, because he is the head of the unit, he was obviously the suspect. And then there was this issue then of that the matter should be investigated. And then that is what should, normally when you investigate that is matters to ensure that the implicated employee is not, does not interfere with, there are no perceptions of interfering with the investigation that they would be suspended. So then this issue of garden leave came in, that is from the CEO as the option. Now we from us as HR, that is we advise that we should not do it because our leave policy does not provide for such leave.
Right. So if we go to page 1503, what you recommended was that a preliminary investigation report was required on which to base the special leave, correct?
Yes.
Right. And then at a subsequent occasion, Mr. Nshunzi was transferred from the complaint.
Okay, I can't hear you now.
And stakeholder management branch to the provincial investigation branch, and this was approved down 4 at 3 foot. I see. If you go to
you broke. I did not get that. Can you repeat that?
Sorry, I pointed out that during May 2020, Mr. Nshunzi was transferred to the coastal branch And this was approved by the PP as one sees from 3425 on the 28th of May 2020.
That is correct.
All right. And it was a salaried increase post. It was an OSD post, correct?
That is correct, yes.
All right. And Mr. Nishunzi's position, security position, was subsequently advertised.
That is correct, yes.
All right. And you sat on the interview panel for that position.
Yes, I did.
And people who sit on the interview panel have to complete a disclosure form to disclose conflicts, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And even if a conflict is disclosed, it wouldn't preclude them from, they do not necessarily have to recuse themselves from the position of being on the panel, correct?
That is correct, yes.
So if we just go to, I just want to get this clear, it's 1336, so just go down. Go down. So even though the PP sat on the panel, if we go down for the positions of PREC and senior manager security. Now, I just want to look at numbers 1 to 8, right?
Yes. Okay. I'm not sure that's
number one. Okay. The disclosure form would tell you that you're not personally related to or know any of the candidates on the short or long list. And where you do have a relationship, it's not of the nature that would risk unfair favoritism, and would then disclose which of the candidates you do know, and that knowledge will not affect your judgment in the short list of the interview, and that you would not be influenced by any person to favor any candidate. Correct?
That is correct, yes.
And everybody who sits on the panel would fill out such a form.
Yes, that is correct.
All right. The next person we go to at page 30 of your affidavit relates to the appointment of the deputy public protector. And we asked you for a job description, and you informed us that there was written delegations in place for the deputy public protector, correct? And that these would appear from, and these are contained in what was then his HR file under your control, right? And so if we take you to paragraph 32 of your affidavit, but I think let's just go to GT5, which is the documents relating to the powers of the deputy public protector. Right. If we see the first set of delegations in place was those which prevailed from December 2016, where Advocate Nkubani confirmed in paragraph 2.1 and 2.2, the powers and functions delegated to the DPP, which is oversight pertaining to operations of the administrative justice and service delivery branch, including provincial activities and oversight role on matters of quality assurance relating to adherence to approved operational business and government processes in all offices. Correct?
That is correct, yes.
Right. We then see from GT6 that in May 2017, If we go to the background information that's there, it reads that the minimum information security standards MIS handbook requires the head of any state institution to implement the security competence process of the institution's personnel who are responsible for handling classified information. The most senior personnel of the institution who hold strategic positions are expected to obtain top secret security clearance certificates which enable them to handle classified information. All executives and senior managers, including the Deputy Public Protector, have applied for security clearance to comply to MIS requirements. And it was unfortunate that your application for top secret security clearance certificate was not granted. It wasn't granted because he didn't have the requisite number of years as a South African citizen, correct?
That is correct, yes.
All right. The next page then says, in the third line, the denial to issue the top secret security clearance by the SSA suggests that the public protector cannot delegate tasks which involve classified information. As a result, I've decided to delegate tasks that commensurate with the security competence status of the DPP while awaiting the parliamentary processes to unfold. And then if we go down into the document from number one onwards, we see that he's tasked to deal with training and to seek partnerships with CETA and to report to the public protector on a quarterly basis. Are you aware of what parliamentary processes are referred to?
No, I'm not aware of that process.
And are you aware of the matter ever coming before Parliament?
Which matter?
Of the functions to be performed by the Deputy Public Protector. Was it ever considered by the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee?
I'm aware that in one of the portfolio committees, the members of the committee raised concern about the DPP delegation being that of training. I remember one of the members raised a concern that DPP was relegated to a training officer. They raised concern about the delegations that were given to DPP by then.
And then on the next document, which is at GT7, we see an amendment to the delegations in April 2018, in which over and above the training functions, the DPP projects have come for 2 years and more to chair task team meetings which deal with think tank files and critical files, and all draft reports in Section 7.9 is to be submitted to the DPP for quality checking before being submitted to the PP for approval.
Yes, that's correct. That? Yes.
In paragraph, then further states, in your affidavit, paragraph 38, that there was then a performance, there was an agreement concluded with the PP on performance expectations. Do you have any knowledge whether those performance expectations were met?
No, I'm not aware of any performance assessment that was conducted between PP and DPP.
And are there any contained in his HR file?
No.
And then the agreement that was concluded with the Deputy Public Protector reflects that if there's a non-agreement in paragraph 39 of your affidavit, it says then it would require the services of an external mediator. Are you aware of any such external mediator ever being appointed?
No, I'm not aware.
And then if you see in paragraph 41, or if we go to GT9, would be more direct, The DPP provided a what's called an exit report to the Portfolio Committee of Justice and Correctional Services, which was contained in his file. And if you go down to 12 May, well, on the second page, and to take you to the second page, he details this. He details what had occurred, go down, starts the paragraph on 12 May. We've gone through that in evidence as to what had happened. And the next paragraph deals with the restoration of further delegations to him. And in the next page, he says, I also, over and above that, go to the next page. He says, I also sit on the executive committee, which consists of the public protector, myself, and the chief executive officer. And he's been asked, I've recently been asked, tasked with chairing all performance review appeals in the organization. And in the next paragraph, he says, the delegations have, however, not been adequately implemented in practice, as I've not received any Section 7(i) notices and draft reports. The think tank structure created by the former public protector, Advocate Lawrence Mushwana, was scrapped in 2017, and officials did not make themselves available for the task team meetings with the result that they stopped being scheduled. And then we go to the next person, which is Mr. Kennedy Kapoza. Who was he in the organization?
He was the chief financial officer.
Right. And what transpired in relation to him, if we go to 42 of your affidavit, can you just briefly tell the committee?
Okay. He was issued with a final written warning for dereliction of duties. And then he referred the matter to the CCMA.
And then what transpired at the CCMA?
Okay, and then his representatives approached, that is the institution that is asking that the matter, if the matter could be settled. Now, that issue was reviewed by the institution, and we were of the view that it would be cost effective, that is to settle the matter and let Mr. Kapoza go and agree on a settlement. And then that would be the cost effective way of settling the matter. So it was. Okay.
No, sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Chilela. My apologies.
Finally, that it was agreed that we should settle the matter, and then Mr. Kapoza be given a settlement, and then the matter will be dealt with.
And the essence of the matter was that there wasn't another position available in the organization to shift him from the CFO post. And again, he could not get top security clearance, which was required by senior officials. So he couldn't continue with his responsibilities as CFO, correct?
That is correct, yes.
And so it seemed that in that context, you recommended the stance of settling with Mr. Kapoza and then not appointing another CFO, but appointing an acting individual until such time as for a period of time in order to not result in a double cost for the organization, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Were you involved in the charges that was brought against Mr. Kapoza?
No, I was not involved in charges.
Okay. Right. Now, who replaced Mr. Kapoza?
The institution approached, that is the state security to second one of their senior financial officials to the to PPSA. So somebody from the state security, from the South African, what is it called? Okay, state was seconded to that to PPSA.
State security. Right, and that person was put in an acting position. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And for how long, do you recall?
For plus minus a year.
Okay, and thereafter was the position advertised?
Yes.
As far as you were aware, was the public protector involved in the separation agreement that was concluded with Mr. Kapoza?
No.
Okay. Right. Now, if we turn to Mr. Vushima Shlangu, who was the CEO, you were involved in the panel for the appointment of the CEO, correct? You sat on it as it was a senior post.
Yes, I did.
What was the decision? You advertised the post for a 5-year contract period to coincide with the PP's end of term, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Right. Now, the position had become vacant because Mr. Themba Lamini had left.
Yes, that is correct.
Right. Did he... And what was the panel's decision at the time of Mr. Mashlangu's interview? You say that he was the best interviewee for the job. He had the requisite qualifications, right?
Yes, that is
what did the panel decide?
Yes, he was the best candidate, but there was an issue of that he was dismissed in his previous employment. So, and that he indicated during the interview that the matter was in labor court. And then the panel was concerned that is about that. So though he was the best candidate, then the panel recommended him, but on condition that the matter in the labor court is decided in his favor, and he also get the top secret security clearance certificate. So those were the two conditions that were set by the panel for his employment.
Right. And okay, then...
Thank you. May I interfere? We will pause there for a tea break and back at 11:45. Hopefully by then, you'll be working towards wrapping up. Thank you.
Recording stopped.
The recording has stopped.